"What shall we do about Jimmy?"
she said, standing beside Marshall while he worked at the control panel.
"He can't smoke in here."
"I will see that he does not, but I don't want to make him more angry. Can I let him in, do you think?"
Marshall felt disappointment flood through him.
"Sure, I guess."
Then she squeezed his shoulder.
"Don't worry. He is busy later with other business of his."
She went and opened the door at the back of the lab, and Jimmy came in. Marshall glanced back and saw him hanging back, hands in his pockets. Marisa came up to stand beside Marshall again at the control panel.
"He is all right," she said. "Now show me."
The electric motors at the far end of the tank whirred, and the wave paddles generated the first wave. It was a small wave, and it rippled smoothly down the length of the tank to splash on a slanted panel at the near end.
"So this is a tidal wave?" she said.
"It is a simulation of a tsunami, yes,"
Marshall said, his fingers tapping the keyboard. On the control panel, displays showed temperature and pressure, generated false color images of the wave.
"A simulation?"
she said.
"Meaning what?"
"We can make waves up to 1 meter high in this tank," Marshall said. "But the real tsunamis are 4, 8, 10 meters high, occasionally even more."
"A wave in the ocean that is 10 meters?
Her eyes widened.
"Really?"
She was looking toward the ceiling, trying to imagine it. Marshall nodded. That would be over 30 feet high, the height of a 3-story building, and it would be moving at 800 kilometers an hour, roaring up to the shore.
"And when it comes to the shore," she said, "is that the slope at this end? It looks like a pebble texture on it. Is that the shore?"
"That's right," Marshall said.
"How high the wave goes up the shore is a function of the angle of the slope. We can adjust the slope to any angle."
The boyfriend came forward, moving closer to the tank, but still he hung back. He never said a word. Marisa was excited.
"You can adjust it? How?"
"It is motorized."
"To any angle?"
She giggled.
"Show me 27 degrees, 27.
"Coming up," Marshall typed at the keyboard. With a slight grinding sound, the slope of the shore angled higher. The American boyfriend went closer to the tank to look, drawn by the activity. It was fascinating, Marshall thought. Anybody would be interested. But the guy never spoke. He just stood and watched the pebbled surface tilt. Soon it stopped.
"So that is the slope?"
she said.
"Yes," Marshall said. "Although, in point of fact, 27 degrees is fairly steep, more than the average shoreline in the real world. Maybe I should set it to—" Her dark hand closed over his.
"No, no,"
she said. Her skin was soft.
"Leave it. Show me a wave. I want to see a wave."
Small waves were being generated every 30 seconds. They rippled along the length of the tank, with a slight whoosh.
"Well, I first have to know the shape of the shoreline. Right now it's a flat beach, but if it was an inlet of some kind..."
"Will it change to make an inlet?"
"Of course."
"Really? Show me."
"What kind of an inlet do you want? A harbor, a river, a bay?"
"Oh,"
she said, shrugging.
"Make a bay."
He smiled.
"Fine. How big?"
With the whir of electric motors, the shoreline began to sink into a curve, the slope indenting into a bowl.
"Fantastique,"
she said.
"Come on, Jonathan, show me the wave."
"Not yet. How big is the bay?"
"Oh,"
she gestured in the air.
"1 mile. A bay of 1 mile. Now will you show me?
She leaned toward him.
I do not like to wait. You should know this.
He smelled her perfume. He typed quickly. Here it comes, he said. A big wave coming into a 1 mile bay with a 27-degree slope. There was a much louder whoosh as the next wave was generated at the far end of the tank, and then it rippled smoothly toward them, a raised line of water about 6 inches high.
Oh, Marisa pouted. You promised me it would be big.
Just wait, he said.
It will grow,
she said, giggling. She put her hand on his shoulder again. Then the American glanced back and gave her a dirty look. She jerked her chin in the air, defiant. But when he looked back at the tank, she took her hand away. Marshall felt despondent again. She was just using him. He was a pawn in this game between them.
You said it will grow? She said.
Yes, Marshall said.
The wave will grow as it comes to the shore. In deep water, a tsunami is small, but in shallow water, it builds, and the inlet will concentrate its power, so it goes higher.
The wave rose higher, and then smashed against the curved shore at the near end. It foamed white and sloshed up the sides of the shore. It came up about 5 feet, he guessed.
So it comes high, she said. In the real world?
That's about 40-50 feet, he said. 15 meters.
Oh la la,
she said, pursing her lips.
So a person cannot run away from this?
Oh no, Marshall said. You can't outrun a tidal wave. There was a wave in Hilo, Hawaii in 1957. Came right down the streets of the town, tall as the buildings. People ran from it, but... So that's it, the American said. That's all it does? His voice was growly, like he needed to clear his throat.
Don't mind him, she said quietly.
Yes, that's what we do here, Marshall said. We generate waves. Jesus fucking A, the American said. I could do that in my bathtub when I was 6 months old. Well, Marshall said, gesturing to the control panel and the monitors displaying data. We generate a lot of databases for researchers around the world who are... Yeah, yeah, that's enough. Boring as whale shit. I'm leaving. You coming, Marisa, or not? He stood and glared at her. Marshall heard her suck in her breath.
No,
she said.
I am not.
The American turned and walked off, slamming the door loudly as he left. Her apartment was just across the river from Notre Dame, and from the balcony in the bedroom he had a beautiful view of the cathedral, which was lighted at night. It was 10 o'clock, but there was still a deep blue in the sky. He looked down at the street below, the lights of the cafes, the crowds walking on the streets. It was a busy and glamorous scene.
Don't worry, she said behind him. If you're looking for Jimmy, he won't come here.
Actually, the thought hadn't occurred to him until she mentioned it. No?
No, she said. He will go elsewhere. Jimmy has many women.
She took a sip of red wine, then set the glass down on the bedside table. Unceremoniously, she pulled her top over her head and dropped her skirt. She was wearing nothing beneath. Still in her high heels, she walked toward him. He must have seemed surprised because she said,
"I told you I do not like to wait,"
and threw her arms around him and kissed him hard, fiercely, almost angrily. The next moments were awkward, trying to kiss while she tore off his clothes. She was breathing hard, almost panting. She never spoke. She was so passionate she seemed almost angry, and her beauty, the physical perfection of her dark body, intimidated him. But not for long. Afterward, she lay against him, her skin soft, but her body taut beneath the surface. The bedroom ceiling had a soft glow from the church facade opposite. He was relaxed. But she seemed, if anything, to be energized, restless after making love. He wondered if she had really come, despite her moans and her final cries, and then abruptly she got up. "Anything wrong?" She took a sip of wine.
"To the toilet," she said,
and turned away, passing through a door. She had left her wine glass. He sat up and took a sip, seeing the delicate pattern of her lipstick on the rim. He looked at the bed and saw the dark streaks on the sheets from her heels. She had not taken them off until midway through their lovemaking. Now the heels were tossed away, coming to a stop beneath the window. Signs of their passion. He still felt, even now, as if he were in a dream. He had never been with a woman like this. Beautiful like this. Living in a place like this. He wondered how much this apartment cost. The wood paneling. The perfect location. He took another sip of wine. He could get used to this, he thought. He heard water running in the bathroom. A humming sound. A tuneless song. With a bang, the front door slammed open and three men burst into the bedroom. They were wearing dark raincoats and hats. Terrified, Marshall set the wine glass on the table. It fell, and dived for his clothes beside the bed to cover himself. But in an instant, the men were on him, grabbing him in gloved hands. He yelled in alarm and panic as they threw him over, shoving him face down on the bed. He was still yelling as they pushed his face into a pillow, and he thought they were going to suffocate him, but they didn't. One man hissed, "Be quiet. Nothing will happen if you are quiet." He didn't believe them, so he struggled, calling out again. Where was Marisa? What was she doing? It was happening so fast. One man was sitting on his back, knees digging into his spine, his cold shoes on Marshall's bare buttocks. He felt the man's hand on his neck, shoving him into the bed. "Be quiet," the man hissed again. The other men had each taken one of his wrists, and they were pulling his arms wide, spread-eagling him on the bed. They were getting ready to do something to him. He felt terrified and vulnerable, and he moaned, and somebody hit him on the back of the head. "Quiet!" Everything was happening quickly. It was all impressionistic. Where was Marisa? Probably hiding in the bathroom, and he couldn't blame her. He heard a sloshing sound and saw a plastic baggie and something white in it, like a golf ball, and they were placing the baggie under his armpit, on the fleshy part of his arm. What the hell were they doing? He felt the water cold against his underarm, and he struggled, but they held him tight. And then, inside the water, something soft pressed against the arm, and he had a sticky sensation, like sticky chewing gum, something sticky and tugging against the flesh of his arm. And then he felt a little pinch. Nothing, hardly noticeable, a momentary sting. The men were moving quickly. The baggie was removed, and at that moment he heard two surprisingly loud gunshots, and Marisa was screaming in rapid French.
"Salaud, salopard, malapati, bouge-toi le cul."
And the third man had tumbled off Marshall's back and fallen on the ground, then scrambling up, and Marisa was still screaming. There were more shots, and he could smell powder in the air, and the men fled. The door slammed, and she came back, stark naked, babbling in French he could not understand. Something about vacherie, which he thought was a cow. But he wasn't thinking straight. He was starting to tremble on the bed. She came over and threw her arms around him. The barrel of the gun was hot, and he yelled, and she set it aside.
"Oh, Jonathan, I am so sorry, so sorry."
She cradled his head against her shoulder.
"Please, you must forgive me. It is all right now, I promise you."
Gradually, his trembling stopped, and she looked at him.
"Did they hurt you?"
He shook his head, no.
"Good. I did not think so. Idiots. friends of Jimmy. They think they make a joke to scare you. And me, I am sure. But you are not hurt?"
He shook his head again. He coughed.
"Perhaps," he said, finding his voice at last, "perhaps I should be going." "Oh, no," she said. "No, no, you cannot do this to me." "I don't feel..." "Absolutely no," she said.
She pushed closer to him, so her body was touching his.
"You must stay a while."
"Should we call the police?"
"Mais non. The police will do nothing. A quarrel of lovers. In France, we do not do this, call the police."
"But they broke in."
"They are gone now," she said,
whispering in his ear. He felt her breath.
"There is only us now. Only us, Jonathan."
Her dark body slid down his chest.